Now, I have to admit that Franco had a certain sense of vision when he decided to turn this town I'm going to talk about, a town in a desolate part of Aragon, into a perpetual reminder of the horrors of the Spanish Civil War.
Though that vision is different from what he originally planned.
To this day, this otherwise isolated place attracts over 10,000 visitors annually, many of whom are from abroad, who come to see the remains of an urban center devastated by a clash between two armies, two enemies, two ideologies. What are we talking about? Well, we're talking about Belchite, B-E-L-C-H-I-T-E. It's a town in the province of Zaragoza, which is in the region of Aragon. It has a population right now of about 1,500, and it's located about 12 kilometers from Francisco de Goya's, the famous painter, hometown. The town is called Fuente Todos. And this town would have gone otherwise without any distinction whatsoever had it not been for this unfortunate bellicose event that took place in the later part of the summer of 1937. Now, back then, the population was actually closer to 3,000, a little over 3,000, I believe. And at one point in history, it was as high as 5,000. So by rural Spain's standards, this was a sizable town. It was large. Now, during the summer of 1937, in the month of August, the Republicans, who were looked at as sort of the left wing, the socialist, the liberal-leaning side, and also the army of the legitimate government, was desperate to strike a decisive victory to show its defenders and supporters abroad that they stood a chance of winning the war. They weren't getting much support. The nationalists, the insurgents under Franco, were getting support from both the Italians and the Germans. And the Spanish government was getting some support from the Soviet Union, which was better than nothing, but unfortunately, that probably was making other countries like France and Great Britain think twice about supporting this government. Plus, they were seeing that it was struggling, so they weren't really sure what to do. And before that, up until then, Franco and his armies had slowly, but very slowly, but steadily, been pushing the Republicans back many battles. Many of the big battles had been fought by then, but for the most part, the Republicans had either lost ground and cities, or at best, contained the nationalist advance. A good example would be Madrid, for example. And the nationalists were attacking and trying to take Madrid in November of 1936. If they had done that, the war probably would have ended much earlier. But the Republicans managed to stop them in their tracks, and that was as good as a victory, but they certainly needed more. So anyway, the offensive led in that summer of 1937 was aimed at actually taking the big city Zaragoza, or Saragossa, which was a major city and still is. It's in the northeast of Spain, and the traditional capital of the region of Aragon. Zaragoza is some 40 kilometers away. Belchite sort of was caught in their path. And at the same time, it was actually controlled at that time by the nationalists who had taken it over in the early days of the war. Originally, there was a socialist government in the town hall, but they were removed. Many people were executed, especially in those first few months of the war. It was particularly bloody, particularly cruel. People behaved and acted in a particularly vindictive manner. But anyway, in August of 1937, there was a garrison of about 5,000 to 7,000 troops in the town, and they were surrounded by an army of nearly 25,000 soldiers, many of whom belonged to the famed international brigades. We're talking about the Lincoln Battalion, for example. These were volunteers from all over the world, and many of them looked at this war almost in a romantic way. They were defending a noble cause against fascism, and they played an important role during this battle. The fighting was some of the fiercest to date, with casualties rising well above 5,000 during the two-week engagement. The town was bombed by aircraft and guns, but finally much of the fighting took place in the streets, real house-to-house fighting. There hadn't been much of that yet, so it was a pretty gruesome, grueling battle. And on top of that, in the middle of the summer, very hot and sweltering, it was a tough, tough battle. In the end, the remaining nationalist forces who were on the verge of losing, here they were, they had sort of taken the town and used the town itself, which was filled with civilians, as sort of their defensive positions. But there were so few left that they made a desperate attempt to break out of town. They just sort of rushed down the street through the gate and made a dash for Zaragoza, which, as I told you, was 40 kilometers away. 300 fled, but apparently only about 80 made it to Zaragoza. The Republicans held on to Belchite until May of 1938, where they were forced to hand it back to the Nationalists. Franco himself paid a visit, and from the balcony of a building in the town hall square, he vowed to rebuild the town. But then he changed his mind. Instead, he decided to build a new town next door and leave the old town abandoned as a reminder of the horrors of war, but not just of any war, those perpetrated by the Republican side, the commies, the Reds. At least that was his plan. But this project was slow to develop, and it took many years for the transition to take place. And even then, it took place little by little. The population from the old town moved to the new town little by little. The last residents didn't move out until 1964. And at that point, this sort of begins the second part of this unusual history, that of a town with a kind of dead sibling lying next to it for decades. A town which had suffered greatly from the war, and then after that was left to suffer after the war silently for years. Decay set in and the buildings and houses began to crumble. First came the roofs, and then the rest of the structures themselves, until the appearance was a shadow of what it had been when the people left.
This neglect may have also been fueled by the residents themselves, who were no longer interested in turning their old town into a memorial. They want to move on, forget the past, forget the horrors, which makes sense since the guide who would show me around the town actually mentions this, that people in the town, even 80, now we're close to 90 years later, are still not very interested in talking about it, even those who were still around to remember.
In the early 2000s, a plan, emergency measures were planned, and in 2011, they were taken to contain the deterioration of the ruins, and the town was fenced in so that no one could get in without permission. Now guided tours take you through it. Now, the day I went, I chose one of the hottest days of the summer at one of the hottest times of day at 5 p.m. In a certain way, that was a good thing because the battle, as I said, took place in late August and the heat was horrific then. So in a way, I got a true feeling of what conditions were like during the war, or at least during that battle. On top of that, it being a Wednesday, in the middle of the week, it came as no surprise that I was the only one there except for the guide. So I got a personalized tour for an hour and a half. My guide's name was Pilar, Pili, an apt name for a woman from Zaragoza, since that is the regional Virgin Mary, Our Lady of the Pillar, and the sacred statue is located in the voluptuous Baroque chapel in the immense Basilica of Pilar in the city of Zaragoza. One way to identify just where a Spanish woman's roots might be from is by learning her name and associating it with the regional Virgin Mary. In any event, Pilar was from the town, and since it was just the two of us, she was able to intimate many of the details associated with the town and its history. Now, from the very beginning, I got a few initial impressions. First of all, the town was larger than I had originally thought, and the ruins in a certain way were more complete. At least that's what I thought at first. I don't know what I was expecting, but there was more to it than what I was expecting. Someone I knew recommended avoiding the tour and just walking on the outside of the fence, because with that you got enough of an idea, but I don't agree with that. There is so much more to see that you wouldn't if you weren't inside. Plus, the proceeds go to restoring what they can. As Pili puts it, restoration is slow because once you fix one part, another part has partially collapsed. Probably a bit of an exaggeration, but I sort of knew what she meant. Another thing that struck me was that even though the town was heavily damaged by the battle, it wasn't leveled the way many people suggest to be the case. I even had that impression. You can actually see photos on the tour which compare, in some cases, what it was like before and what it was like just after the battle or the early 40s in the 1940s. And though a number of the buildings were certainly damaged or severely damaged, and some of them were destroyed, from what I could tell, much of the town was still intact. And we know that the townspeople lived there for many years afterwards, in some cases as many as 26 years later. So this was a big town. And when you do this tour, it's sort of hard to get that feeling until you see these pictures. And then you think, oh my God, this was big. This was in a huge town. And what I was telling you about the population is confirmation of it. So it helps to get that sense, because what you see that's left of it, part was from the battle and part was just from decades of neglect. And Franco, when he originally said he would rebuild it, well, I think it was a reasonable task. It was something that could have been done. But we know that the decision to move people out had more to do with propaganda than anything else. But those pictures are important. Otherwise, it's nearly impossible to understand just what the town originally looked like. The visit took us down the main street by the hospital, the new plaza, the old plaza, or the new square, the old square, the town hall, which is no longer there, up to the Church of St. Martin of Tours, the remains of the convent right next to it. There was a jail in the distance, an old jail. And then you had the Church of San Augustine. And then you had to go up to the Trujal. The Trujal is a local word for a large vat set in the ground for storing olives, which would then be used for being pressed and making olive oil. Now, during the battle, it served as a makeshift mass grave. Though Pilar told me the number of 300 bodies of military casualties from both sides, as well as civilians of all ages. Others say the number is something closer to 80. In the end, they don't seem to really know how many people were buried there, but it was an awful lot. And there are also two other mass graves there. There is a memorial in the Trujal that stands there, a plaque dedicated to the heroic defense of the Franco troops. A newer all-encompassing plaque was placed there over 10 years ago, but a year later it was torn off and destroyed by far-right supporters. Pilar added, now they don't allow flags of any type inside the grounds. Now this is a place of peace. She couldn't have expressed it better. In times such as these, we need these places more than ever. Pilar was able to point out where her parents first lived, a rented place on the main street before they moved to the new town. To them, that made sense, as they would be getting a new home. To some, that was a bargain. To others, it was a travesty. They didn't want to leave. Eventually, they had to. And then what else do we do at the convent of St. Augustine, as I was telling you, now closed to the public because it's very unstable. They're going to have to restore that. She told me that she could recall christenings and weddings taking place there, people she knew. So it was very personal. We went to the side of the bell tower. There's actually a shell that's lodged about three quarters of the way up. The shell was actually removed not too long ago, and they diffused it to make sure it was no longer explodable. And then they put it back in the same place. And then next to the tower, there was this huge fig tree. It was full of brevas or brevers. These are the spring figs. The fig trees have two harvests, two crops every year, the spring figs and the fall figs. So we grabbed a couple, peeled them, and munched away on them as we talked about the town. Anyway, it was also a place where there was a stage for a small concert coming up in a couple of weeks. I think there were rock concerts, so they use it for other things too, which I found to be interesting. But one thing that was striking, there was absolutely no one else there around the tour. No one except for a camera crew filming something. It looked like they were doing a report or a documentary. I get the feeling that actually is pretty common here. This town stirs curiosity in people, especially foreigners. And in my opinion, almost probably more than the Spanish themselves, it's such a unique place. As I was saying, 10,000 people come to visit it every year, which is impressive for a town that's basically in the middle of nowhere. It's a bit out of the way for a lot of people, but it's not too crazy. As I said, it's only about 30 minutes by car from Zaragoza. And it's not so much the history of the battle itself, but the history of how that affected the town and how it was turned into such a unique place in Spanish history and probably in world history. Belchite now belongs to the
Aragon.
Heritage Foundation and the town of Belchite. That's what keeps it going, as well as other contributions through the entrance fees. As I was telling you, right now, what they're trying to do is to sort of keep it from deteriorating any further, and they're looking into potential projects for the future.
So, if you think about it, Belchite seems to be entering a third phase of this unusual history, the first being the war, the battle itself, which did so much destruction to the town and its people. Then you had the second phase when Franco turned it into a sort of living museum and then forced the people to leave the town. It was his hope that people would never forget the horrors that the enemy, the Republicans, perpetrated. And yet, during this period, it seems as if it were the people themselves, the former residents themselves of this town, who were eager to forget it, leave it alone, put it behind them, and move on. And therefore, you had this period of neglect and decay. And now there's this third phase, which has become sort of a period of reconciliation, where people from nearby and abroad are trying to preserve this place, but with a different purpose in mind, probably a reminder of everything that happened over these last 80 years, but also possibly to turn it into, as I said, what Pilar mentioned, a place of peace, a place that is finally at peace with itself and with the locals. At least that's the impression I get.
But anyway, definitely go check this place out. If you get a chance, it's well worth it. I'm not sure if you should do it at the time I did. I got lucky. It sort of clouded over, so it was a little bit cooler. But you might want to check it out probably better in spring or fall. And you get a lot out of it and not get roasted in the process. Anyway, that'll be all for this podcast brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos, or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. You can also check us out on our YouTube channel and support us by subscribing. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.